Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, April the 5th. As we like to do once a week, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into with Bill today. We're going to talk a little bit about the All-Star Game. President Biden, Hunter Biden is back in the news. I guess there's still a crisis at the border, last time I checked. And there's a shooting at the Capitol that was a little bit interesting. So let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, how is the weather in New York? How is everything in New York these days, other than they're going to raise your taxes?
Well, they're going to raise our taxes. They're going to reduce our business base. The weather in New York right now in White Plains, which is where I am, is beautiful. I can't wait to get out. And
all right.
having had my second shot over the weekend, I now feel energized.
Yes. Well, say hello to Biden. To Al Gore, if you see him, and ask him if he's had his shots.
Oh, I imagine that he has, and he probably got special consideration. And he probably wonders, though, whether there's an environmental hazard from the shots. I'm sure that will enter his mind. God, whatever happened to Al Gore? I haven't seen him in years.
Yeah, you're right. He's kind of disappeared a little bit. But I think part of the reason, Bill, he disappeared, if I may something – I don't want to be really harsh on the former vice president, but the movie that he made turned out to be such a farce. I mean, the predictions that were made in that movie. I mean, if you watch that movie today, it's like you're watching some alternate universe, because none of what he said turned out to be true, Bill, in that movie.
Well, that is true. That is absolutely correct. And we have a press in this country that is so inferior today and so inadequate to do what is necessary in journalism. You have a situation where, as you said, predictions are made. They're noted. They don't come true. And then when they don't come true, it's not noted that they don't come true. Nobody wants to cover that story. You know, I remember the predictions made for the year 2015. Not one of them came true, and they just moved on. That's apparently what you do these days. You just move on.
you make predictions, they don't come true, and you move on.
You move on, yes. Well, we have
and make new predictions, Bill. Then you make new predictions. Then you say, okay, well, it didn't happen in 2020, but in 2040, New York will be one gigantic lake. Yeah, underwater.
That's right.
In 2020, the Empire State Building will be underwater.
It reminds me of an old line from Groucho Marx. I have my principles, and if you don't like those, I have others.
Well, the easiest way to explain something is to quote Groucho, Bill. That was a great quote.
Yes. We now have that. Because Biden is in office and the Democrats are back in power, we now have a return, really, to the Obama administration. It really is the Obama administration. There are no different policies. It is loaded with people from the Obama administration. I don't think Biden is completely there. You get the feeling sometimes he just signs whatever is put in front of him and selects whatever people are suggested to him. We have a very, very disturbing situation involving the border, as you well know. We also have a very disturbing situation involving China, but you would never
know it
reading the paper or watching CNN. I mean, that doesn't mean – and we also have the new trend, this week's trend. Each week is different. You have to get a different trend every week, is anti-Asian prejudice in America, which we are assured is coming from white supremacists, even though that is not true. Every attack against Asian Americans in New York City has come from people other than white supremacists.
Right.
And they are aware of it. It's all on videotape. But instead of doing something about it, they keep on giving us this narrative. So there was a demonstration yesterday by some Asian organization, down with white supremacy, even though the white supremacists aren't doing a thing to them. So you have to wonder, are they interested in their community, or are they interested in satisfying their political masters?
Well, that's it. And we'll be talking about the All-Star game in a minute, because it kind of fits that in. But I do want to take a second here, Bill, at the front. And remember Bob Jaggers. You and I had a chance to talk to him one Sunday back in 2014. Hard to believe that was 7 years ago. But he had just returned from the 70th anniversary of D-Day, and we had a chance to talk to him. And, of course, Bob Jaggers was born in 1922 in Chicago. He passed away a few days ago. His death was not a shock. He had been ill for some time. He got to live almost 100 years, which is remarkable. And, you know, he's part of a generation, and you've talked about it several times, an amazing generation. And I just wanted to say rest in peace, Bob, and thank you for everything. Besides the military service, he was quite a personality around here, because he wrote a book about the war, his experiences, and he would go around and talk to the high schools about it. And the guy was a great personality everywhere he went around here. Anyway, we're going to miss him a lot. He was a member of our church, a father, a husband, a very successful businessman. It just seems that if you were going to, you know, write a life story, you couldn't do any better than the real story of Bob Jaggers, Bill.
Yes, and that real story was repeated many times, and that generation is leaving us. I mean, we don't have them to depend on. You know, it reminds me of the fact that those of us who grew up during the war and after the war had that generation always there. It was like a shadow in our background. We knew they were there, and they provided a kind of stability to the country. When President Kennedy took office in 1961, and had to face the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, where we almost went to war, we still had in this country millions of World War II veterans who were young men. Young men, because the war had only ended 17 years earlier. You had 18 and 19-year-old soldiers from World War II, 20-year-old soldiers who were in their mid-30s. And they were very much a part of the nation. We don't have a generation today with that kind of experience. We have a generation today of the 1960s, which is not exactly the same thing, to put it mildly. I mean, their biggest problem is they didn't like the lounge in the college that they went to.
Right.
And today it's even worse. I mean, today you know, we're dealing with young people and a millennial generation that goes to a school and somebody disagrees with them and they say, "I don't feel safe." My God,
yes.
When you compare it to Bob Jaggers and what he had to face, we are a softer and dumbed-down country, and I think we're in a great deal of danger because of it.
Right. No, that generation, in fact, you mentioned President Kennedy. I think every president, beginning with President Eisenhower and going all the way, I believe, to, I guess, the first Bush. So Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, and the first Bush, that's seven men, I think, or eight men, all of them served in World War II in some capacity. Now, Jimmy Carter was a younger man, but still,
yes,
I mean, they were all in service in World War II. What an impact that generation had.
Well, absolutely. And the one that wasn't, ironically, was Harry Truman, but he served in World War I as a captain. So he went way back. And then, of course, in World War II, at the end of World War II, he was the president and had to make very critical military decisions, such as the use of the atomic bomb. So in a way, he served also. And
That's right.
It's true, of course, President Eisenhower, of course, as a commander in Europe, President Kennedy as an officer in the Navy, Lyndon Johnson volunteered to leave Congress and did serve. He was sent back. And then Nixon did some service in the Navy as an officer in World War II. Ford was aboard an aircraft carrier. After Ford came Carter. I don't recall if Carter said serving World War II, but he was an Annapolis graduate. And,
right, but
then
he,
of course,
he
Reagan,
may have
well,
been.
Okay.
I think he was in the academy during the war. He may have he may have been in Korea instead. I don't know, but he was, like you say, a U.S. Navy veteran officer actually.
Yes, well, as an academy graduate, but it stopped
yes.
with the first Bush, because then we had an abrupt change to Jimmy Carter,
yes.
who had a contempt for the grew up with a contempt for the military in that '60s generation, and then
Clinton or Carter? I'm sorry, did you mean Clinton?
Clinton.
Yeah, after
yes.
the first Bush.
Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No,
Clinton,
you're right. After the first Bush.
Was very aloof from the military, and his wife in particular was very aloof from the military. They were part of the 60s generation.
Mm-hmm.
After that, of course, we had Bush II, who was not too young for World War II. He later enlisted in the Air National Guard, and
right.
there was a big scandal over that created by CBS, which revealed that he had enlisted in the Air National Guard. I have no idea what was wrong with that because he volunteered to be a fighter pilot, which is one of the most dangerous things you can do in the military. But
right.
people tried to make something of it. Then, of course, you had Obama, who not only didn't serve in the military, I didn't think he knew there was a military. I mean, he was just so totally, you know, he actually referred, as you may remember, to a Navy corpsman. Not
That's
corpsman,
right,
but
yeah.
a corpsman. Then of course, we had Trump. Trump did not serve in the military, and I think we're really kind of finished with that tradition. Biden did not serve, to the best of my knowledge, and we are in a situation today where most Americans have probably never met a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in my generation, I lived in a block in the suburbs, and there was a guy who was severely wounded by
mm-hmm.
a mortar shell. There was another one who was a tail gunner on a B-17, and a third one who was in World War II and then got called up in Korea. Then there was
mm-hmm.
a woman whose brother was a merchant captain who was sunk twice during the war. In the battle for the Atlantic, you just looked everywhere, and they were all over,
right.
all over. And it gave you a sense of comfort that they had won the war and served with incredible ability. I wish we had it today.
Well, I do, too. Now, if Tom Cotton of Arkansas becomes the next president of the United States, and he's probably going to run, then maybe that tradition will return because he served in Afghanistan and Iraq, I believe.
Yes.
It's probably a lucrative legal career. Yeah, it's probably too late for Vietnam veterans to run for president because they would be in their 70s, many of them, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so they probably wouldn't be.
We probably have a few left in Congress. But
yeah.
I think They used to be really kind of an unspoken requirement after the Second World War that candidates
mm-hmm.
for federal office had served. Now, that was not true of everyone. Hubert Humphrey did not serve, and he
mm-hmm.
ran for president twice or
mm-hmm.
even three times. It was really not held against him, but he didn't serve, but so many others did. You asked the question, who do you look up to? What generation do you look up to? Young people today really don't have a generation they can look up to and say, look what they achieved. Today
right.
they're interested in people being woke.
Those
people are probably doing far more harm than good in what they're woke about. But,
right.
you know, the greatest military decision. Go ahead.
No, you're right. They're the greatest military generation, just the greatest generation is somebody, I think it was whoever called them that. And I just, you know, that's right. They're passing away because, like Bob, he's 99 and others are in that age group. So, I mean, they're passing away naturally, of course, but they leave behind a great legacy. And I know Bob, not just as a personal friend, but what he did in our community was just amazing. So rest in peace, as I say, and thank you for the service. That's all you can say. But it's not just the service that we thank him for. We thank him for coming back, raising a family, raising a good family, being a businessman. I mean, as I said, if you write a biography, you cannot write a better one than Bob Jagger's. I mean, it's just an amazing.
Yes.
You read it and you go, wow, this is like a perfect life. And somebody, he told me a story one time, and then we'll get into the current events, but he told me a story one time. He's a huge baseball fan. He knew which of course gave him and I a lot of material to talk about. But he could tell you a 1940 starting lineup for the Detroit Tigers. I mean, just in a snap. Even in his old age, he had a great memory. So one time he told me the story of how in 1968, October 1968, he was in Argentina because one of the auto manufacturers had sent them down there to run their business. And he was down there. Of course, they don't watch baseball in Argentina. And back in 1968, there was no cable. So he took time from the business in his office, had lunch in the office, and turned on American Forces radio on shortwave, a little shortwave radio, and he listened to Game 7 of the 68 World Series when the Tigers beat his Tigers beat the Cardinals. He listened to it on shortwave radio, another thing that I grew up listening to, but a lot of the younger people don't know what it is. And anyway, so he listened to the game, and he and I were talking one time about that game, and he said, you know, what turned that game around was Jim Northrup hitting a triple that went over Curt Flood's head.
Right. Well,
and
the
I'm
detail.
Sitting there going, my God, what, you know, this happened 53 years ago, and he knew it like that. So anyway, so such a wonderful man. But let's talk about current events because they're not nice. And I want to begin with President Biden. They're terrible. I want to begin with President Biden, Bill. You know, like any citizen, you want to give the new president a chance. And when he said he wanted to unite us, okay, all right, let's give you a chance. But this man is either lying or he doesn't know what he's saying because he's not uniting anybody, Bill. This is the most divisive politics that we've had in quite some time, Bill.
It is. And I think nothing more divisive than the ridiculous behavior of the president toward the Georgia election law, which he apparently never read when he declared it Jim Crow on steroids. It is nothing of the kind. You would think the press would challenge him on it, but the press doesn't challenge him on anything because the press is bought and paid for by the Democratic Party. But it has caused enormous harm. He denounced the law in Georgia and encouraged Major League Baseball to move the All-Star game out of Georgia, which it has now done. The cost to Cobb County, where it would have been played, Cobb County being a Democratic county that whose votes allowed Joe Biden to take the state of Georgia in the election, it will cost $100 million to Cobb County. I'm sure many of those losses will be in small businesses owned by minorities. I don't know if the president is even aware of that. And now Major League Baseball, having done its woke play for the week, looking completely ridiculous because the law is not anything near what was being described, is looking for another state in which the All-Star game can be played. Now, if they were really smart, which they are not, they would return the game to Georgia and say, you know, we've rethought this and looked over the law, and we realized the losses to the people of Georgia, and we decided to go back. They would be cheered all over the country, but I'm sure that the radical leftists who now have really infiltrated into every aspect of American life will not let them do it, and so people will be hurt. Now, one of the most interesting things is that who enters the picture at this point but Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, who wants the game played in New York. Now, New York has among the most restrictive voting laws. I mean, nobody is allowed to vote here. I don't know. they have something. I don't know where they get the numbers from. But New York has voter ID, a very strict form of voter ID. You really have to prove who you are. And is infinitely more restrictive than Georgia. Now, what if they play the game in New York? What does that say? I mean, they're going to an even more restrictive state. I think that the Commissioner of Baseball should resign.
He should
get out. The president of Delta Airlines, who made a fool of himself, should get out. The president of Coca-Cola should be forced to drink Pepsi because he made a fool of himself. All these companies all over the country come out in favor of boycotting Georgia when they don't know the first thing about the situation. And, of course, naturally, they are joined by Hollywood non-stars. I saw Mark Hamill made a comment. I don't remember the last time Mark Hamill was in the movie.
I don't either. I don't
remember.
I
think it was Gone with the Wind, you know.
Or something. Was he the – just out of curiosity, because I had not heard his name either for a long time. Didn't he do skating, ice skating, or was that somebody else?
No, you're thinking of Dorothy Hamill.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Hamill did Star Wars.
Oh, okay. Well,
one of the stars of Star Wars was...
Okay, he was the young fellow in that movie, right?
Yes. How many years ago? 40 years ago? Something like
that. Well, 1977 is when that came out, so that's a while.
Yes. It sure
is. Maybe his retirement ran out, Bill. Maybe his retirement ran out, and he needs to generate some revenue.
That's probably true. And I think this has to have a different kind of ending, but I think that Biden has so trapped himself. Can he really go back on what he said? If he would deliver a speech to the nation, this is a great opportunity for a president to do something moral and say, look, I made a statement. I was wrong. And I think I misled people. I apologize for it. I hope the All-Star game is returned to Atlanta where it belongs, and let's proceed from here. But he can't
He could if he wanted to, but I don't think the people who write his speeches will let him, and that's the problem.
No.
I don't know if it's him or somebody else writing the speech. But one thing, Bill, aside from the economic losses that you talked about in the city of Atlanta, and, you know, we had the All-Star game here in 1995, and it is a big economic event. I mean, lots of people come in. There's a lot of business sponsorship. So it is a huge event, the All-Star Game these days. It's not like in the 50s, you may remember the All-Star Game. All they did was collect the money for the players' pension back then. But today it's a big, big business for whatever city gets it. But the real tragedy of taking it out of Atlanta is that this is the year that Henry Aaron passed away. And Henry Aaron, of course, played for the Braves. And what a tragedy that the city was apparently going to honor him. And that, of course, I mean, if you take it to New York, you can still do the honor of Henry Aaron, but it's not quite the same thing right there in Atlanta where he is buried. And obviously he was very much involved with the Atlanta Braves after baseball. He became an executive with him. So that's the other part of it, that they're hurting what could have been really a great celebration of Henry Aaron, who passed away just a couple of months ago, Bill.
Well, of course. I think the mayor of Atlanta, you know, this is racial. It's about race.
Sure.
And being black, she had to make a statement saying she agreed with the criticism, but she wished the game was being played. Stacey Abrams, who is one of the worst, I mean, she is one of these people who started this whole voter suppression myth that if you have a voter ID, it's voter suppression. I don't know how that's voter suppression. The only people being suppressed are voters who shouldn't be voting because they don't qualify. But she said also she wished the game had not been taken out. They now realize the damage that's been done, especially now that the people who've read the bill say this is nowhere near what Biden described. This is a time for leadership, but Biden is so completely controlled by the left in his party and by the Obama crowd that I don't know what he can do. But I hope his poll numbers really get hurt from this. And I hope also the the national opinion of the press goes down even further than it is today, although that's not – I don't know if that's possible given where the numbers are. But I think people see how badly run things are.
Right. Well, and there's another, you know, another part to all of this that is also coming out, and you saw this with the NBA too, and that is these are the same organizations – that have no problem doing business with China. You know, they should move the All-Star game to China and have it sponsored by Coca-Cola. You know, and Delta will fly you to the game if you need transportation. So the All-Star game can be moved to China. the flights by Delta, endorsed by Coke, and Major League Baseball will have the All-Star game there. I mean, I have no problem with baseball promoting baseball in China. I mean, it's a big market. I get it. But there's a difference between promoting baseball in China and doing business with China and saying what they're saying about the United States. I mean, there's a real hypocrisy there, like Senator Rubio was saying, and he's tired of it. I'm tired of it. And I think most people see it, Bill. I think this commissioner, like you said, should resign. He should say, look, I'm sorry. I didn't know the law when I made the statement that I made, and I resigned. One thing about that the commissioner doesn't understand, but I guarantee you, Bill, if you and I were the owners of a baseball team, we'd be furious about this because they're tuning out a lot of people. There's a lot of people who are very angry at this, and they're not going to watch the game or buy tickets. Who does that benefit? Does that benefit the players' union? I don't see it. Does that benefit the game? I don't see it. So who exactly benefits other than a small group of people, these woke people? I don't even know if they watch baseball because they're so anti-American, they probably think baseball is white supremacist, Bill.
Well, they think everything is white supremacist. I mean, the current situation in the country is that white supremacy, which, by the way, is a term that actually applies to the Old South. That was the Old South was white supremacist. The New South is not. But the term is so overused. I mean, what is happening because of this woke mentality is that the people who really deserve the help, which are young minority children who deserve a better education than they're getting, a better life than they're getting, are completely ignored. I mean, every week in this country, black children are murdered by the carload, just murdered, and nobody says a word. Nobody has anything to say about it because they didn't have the good sense to be murdered by white police officers.
But you're so right.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I laugh. I mean, but you're exactly right. I mean, if the wrong guy pulls the trigger, if a white guy pulls the trigger, then it's white supremacists. But I don't, Bill, do you know of any white groups that are going to Chicago every weekend and kill these black children? I don't know of any, Bill.
No, I don't know of any either. The reporting is abysmal. The discussion is abysmal. The president is giving no leadership of any kind. And now we're being told that the attacks on Asian Americans are being caused by white supremacists, which is blatantly untrue. Untrue. And the press does nothing about it. Absolutely nothing. You know,
let me take a break, Bill, and let me take a break. And then when we come back, I want to continue on this. And also there's a shooting at the Capitol. Let me take a quick break. And then we'll continue our conversation with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We're having our weekly chat with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, just as we took a break, we started to talk about the latest fashionable thing, which is, of course, to say that white supremacists are attacking Asian Americans. The media had a real disappointment in Colorado when they found out that it was not a white guy. And in Washington, D.C., when they found out that it was not a white man who did the shooting. But this is now getting offensive, Bill. And if you're a member of the media, you got to look at yourself in the mirror and say, you know, are we really reporters or are we just people who like to print whatever is fashionable, Bill?
Well, the decline in journalistic standards has been one of the great stories of our time, which, of course, is not told because the only people who could tell it would be journalists. But it did not begin yesterday. It began during the Vietnam War, which was the first war covered by a new generation of college graduates who came out of the early 1960s, came out of college in the early 1960s, some late 1950s, and they really were quite different from the previous generation. Many of them went to war waving their Harvard Crimson credentials, press cards, thinking they knew more than the people fighting on the ground in Vietnam. Some of us have met veterans of the Vietnam War who said they were absolutely dismayed by the press coverage. It was so different from the actual situation. So they've had a generation, or more than a generation, to practice the corruption. And there is plenty of corruption. Today, I think I can trust Fox News more than anyone else. People criticize Fox News as being right-wing. It really isn't. It may have been at one time. It's very balanced. It's very solid reporting. I certainly cannot trust CNN. I cannot trust CBS, which still calls itself the House of Murrow. I don't think that Edward R. Murrow, having heard him for years, would even recognize CBS News today. But the inability to confront a situation, as you said, the Washington incident in which a police officer was killed was conducted allegedly by this man who was a member of the Nation of Islam. That is an important part of the story because the Nation of Islam has a political point of view. And yet it wasn't completely ignored. It was minimized to the point where it almost wasn't there. And it was barely mentioned by some news organizations. Now, Fox gave a complete background on the individual, which is exactly the right thing to do. And we at least understood where he came from, what his beliefs were. We could make our own decision as to whether we feel it was important to the outcome of the story, because because he is dead and cannot be interviewed, we probably will never actually know. But the inability, the refusal of the press to at least give us some information about his ideology and the ideology of the Nation of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that many people don't know. We think they do, but they don't. You know, there's an old saying in journalism, and I think it's correct, never underestimate people's intelligence, but mm-hmm. never overestimate their knowledge. And they mm-hmm. should have given a background about Louis Farrakhan, but they don't, because we have a very frightening type of journalist working today. These are people who are also are woke. And they
right.
go along
and look
with
what happened
stuff.
In Colorado, Bill. Same thing.
Oh, absolutely. Ten
in Colorado,
killed.
You actually had reporters who were tweeting, saying, well, another white male shoots again. And,
well,
I mean, you had all these people tweeting and broadcasting all this stuff. And then the word came out that, he's actually a Syrian immigrant. Now, let me just say something, because I actually don't care. Well, I care about their background, but to me, the person at fault is the person who did the shooting. He's the one
yes.
who did it. I don't blame Louis Farrakhan because of this guy in Washington, and I don't blame somebody else for this guy in Boulder. I mean, it's the person who did it. But if you're going to say every time, you know, there's a person, a white man shoots, and you're going to say he's a white supremacist, well, there should be at least equal coverage with the others. I would prefer that they don't do that because, I believe the guilty person is the one who did the shooting. But, you know how they do it every time. They were blaming Trump for the guy in Colorado. I mean, they literally had tweets blaming Trump for the guy in Colorado, and we found out that he actually hated Trump, the guy in Coloradoville.
Oh, absolutely. Look, the approved narrative is that all the violence is done by Trump people, that Trump tried to overthrow the government on January 6th, which he did not. And it doesn't end. You know, if you look, for example, at another story, and that is the remarkable development of the vaccines that we're now using to stop the pandemic. They were developed under Trump's administration and under a program that he started and completed. And yet he is given no credit at all. It's as if he never existed. This is this is cancel culture at its worst. Just eliminate mm-hmm. him. He doesn't exist. And this is what we're learning. And, you know, I don't know how long a nation can take this and still survive as a democracy. I really don't.
Well, I agree. Or survive as a nation. I mean, we may find ourselves here pretty soon divided into a couple of countries, you know. When yes. the movie Dumbo is that Disney movie, you know, about the little elephant who flies, a movie that my sons used to watch and love when they were kids, and I'm looking forward to showing that movie to my grandson because it's a great movie, a cute little movie, exactly for a little kid. That movie is now racist. The Aristocats is racist.
Yes.
The Swiss Family yes. Robinson is racist. I mean, you say, wait a minute, this is crazy. How can you have a country where people think the movie that a three-year-old boy watches is racist? I mean, it comes a point in time. This stuff either stops or we're going to end up like a marriage where the differences are no longer reconcilable, Bill. I mean, I don't know how you can have a country where things can be that different between one group and the other, Bill. It's not a country anymore if that happens, Bill.
And you're absolutely correct. And the reality is that the people who are being hurt most by this are black children. They, you don't even hear them referred to. If you want to really be woke, if you really want to do something for racial advancement in America, concentrate on the education being received by black kids and stress science, chemistry, mathematics, engineering, the things the country really needs. The country is not in desperate need of wokeism. And it's not in desperate need of illiterate children. I mean, we actually saw a Rutgers professor of English saying that what we really need in America is linguistic justice. And she basically said that why should black people be forced to speak and read our language? And, you know, why shouldn't their dialect be treated as equal? Well, the reason is that standard English is the international language. It's the language in which business is conducted and science is conducted. And the greatest linguistic justice you can give to an African-American child is to teach that child standard English at a high level and drill that child and make certain that that child knows it and uses it so that that child, when he or she grows up, can function in the real world. There's no interest in that at all. It's just appalling.
No.
And what will happen is, what I think they really want to happen is, there will be no progress so that the same hustlers that are in power today will be in power 20 years from now.
That's right. And it's a shame because, you know, yesterday was the anniversary. You remember this quite well, the anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination.
Oh, yes.
And I bring this up because it got very little press yesterday, the fact that it was the anniversary. And I'm wondering, you know, I said to myself, gee, that's funny that nobody's talking about this, but Martin Luther King spoke very good English. I think he would be appalled at hearing that
yes.
about linguistic justice or whatever. He would be appalled, I think, at another report from another college that now I guess math is racist too, that, you know, math is also racist these days. And that's not the Martin Luther King that I remember. What I remember was a man who said, judge my son or my children by their character, not their skin color. It seems like that part of the I Have a Dream speech has been completely forgotten by this civil rights movement. They're not really civil rights anymore, by this new movement called woke. They want you to judge people on the basis of their skin color, not their character, Bill. The opposite of Martin Luther King. What a shame that is, Bill. Who would have thought that? You probably remember the I Have a Dream speech. Who would
Very
have thought that
so.
That
Was
would
that...
be – who would have thought that 50 years later it would be the exact opposite of what he was saying, Bill?
Well, yes, and now there's some black spokesmen on television who talk about this being a period of racial reconciliation. Reconciliation over what?
Right.
You know, there are more opportunities available for young African Americans in this country today than ever before, but they are not taught to avail themselves of those opportunities. They're being taught by the critical race theory crowd that everybody hates you, that you're a victim, that you're oppressed by the white people, and it'll always be that way. Well, what are these kids going to be 20 years from now?
Right.
They're going to be resentful. They're going to
they're
not going to be part of their nation. They're going to be at the bottom again. And what is interesting here is that the rest of the world is not buying what these people are selling. at all. And so African Americans are going to be at a dramatic disadvantage unless they begin to see themselves as Americans who absolutely have grievances. Nobody denies that there is racism in America and that it is easier to be white. Nobody denies that. But groups that succeed are groups that overcome. You know, the original civil rights anthem was, "We shall overcome." I don't know what it is today, but, you know, but maybe give me reparations. It's not it's not working for the child. Another thing would be that if there were really a true civil rights movement today, there would be a march on Washington demanding public safety for black citizens. You see the horrible, horrible conditions in our cities. In New York City, 95% of the murders are committed against African Americans. 95%. And yet not a word is spoken.
It's generally black on black, which is the real tragedy of this. And that's the part the media doesn't like. The media doesn't like it when it's black on black. They only get excited when it's white on black, which is actually very rare in terms of numbers. You know, it's actually very rare to see a white police officer kill a black man. You know, it shouldn't happen, but it's actually very rare. Bill, I want to go to a couple of other big topics here this week. The Hunter Biden is apparently back in the news. I understand he's got a book that he's selling, but he may have said something that he'll regret later on. He said something that that laptop could be his. Well, that is a real problem because we were told by the media that it wasn't and that it was not a story. And I understand that NPR had to take it back. And, well, you know, this could be a real problem for President Biden, this thing about the laptop.
Well, absolutely, but it'll go away. You know, the press will say it's yesterday's news. He's already president. Let's judge him by the job he does and all the rest. I mean, we have a situation where major scandals are being covered up. I mean, the Hunter Biden scandal was covered up during the election campaign. As you remember, social media would not reprint the New York Times, not New York Times, but New York Post story about the laptop, and the American people did not know, or at least most didn't know. And this is what we have. It is frightening. The press was supposed to be, was designed to be our last line of defense in America. It was designed to be the watchdog over government. And today, it is simply a collaborator. Very dangerous. The problems we have, the major problems we have in America today, are institutional problems, which means the very institutions designed to protect democracy are failing. And I am truly frightened. I don't know how long this country can go on like this. And you know what? I use this example. How long do you think it is going to be before an American Nobel laureate goes to his mailbox and opens a letter saying, "Dear Dr. Jones, we know what the conditions are in America. We can give you a better life. And it will be an offer from a foreign country. Move here with your lab, with your interns, with your disciples, and we will pay you a very large salary and completely protect you." And you want to know something? That may be very enticing to people because they see around them what is happening in their own country.
Well, especially at the universities, which is, totally a joke. I mean, what's happening at universities, I mean, universities are supposed to teach students, you know, get an education, get a better job, and now they're nothing but woke. I mean, everything is woke. I mean, when math is racist, Bill, you know, that's almost like watching an episode of The Twilight Zone. You know, these episodes of The Twilight Zone where, you know, you would go into an alternative universe or something. That's almost like you're saying there, how can math be racist? I mean, who came up with that one? But you've got people at the universities who are saying it, Bill.
Well, they not only are saying it, they're enthusiastic about it. Now, they may not actually be, but universities are remarkable places because we have such a fake understanding of what they actually are. Henry Kissinger was once asked why university politics were so vicious, and he said because the stakes are so small. And maybe that's it. It's a small world It's a small world of people who are intensely competitive, intensely career oriented, and constantly frightened that they won't be promoted. People have an image of a university as a great center of learning, a great center of intellect. Most university professors really aren't very intellectual. They're experts in one little area, sometimes not even that. The conversations that go on college campuses are not particularly stimulating. We really don't look to universities any longer for real wisdom because of what they've become. And the wokeism and the nonsense about a cancel culture has taken over universities because university people are frightened and are cowardly.
Right.
I know one college professor, one very well known professor who makes speeches, and their speeches in a somewhat conservative direction, and after every speech. He gets phone calls from other professors around the country saying, thank you for saying what I can't say.
Mm-hmm.
What a remarkable statement for a professor to be made, for a professor to make in the United States of America.
That's right. And the universities where, you know, we want to encourage, you know, people to think for themselves and so on. I will say one thing. I do want to talk about the border. I want to make sure we have time for that. But I want to say one thing. Maybe we can develop this at a future show, but I think a lot of young men, particularly white young men who graduate from college these days, may very well just say, you know what, I'm going to go to a technical school, I'm going to get an actual degree that I can start a business or get a job with, and the heck with these universities and the heck with these woke companies. And there may be an impact like that, I think. If I was, you know, a high school graduate, and I was ambitious, and I wanted to do something with my life, I would say, the heck with these universities. I'm just going to get a technical degree so that I can have my own business. A plumber is going to make more money than many of these people. You know, lots of technical degrees that are really in demand for jobs and opportunities. And the heck with these corporations, the heck with these universities. You may see that beginning to happen, Bill, because these universities and now apparently these companies are – beginning to, you know, well, they're beginning to be so anti-American that I would hate to work in one of those places, Bill.
So would I, and I think that many people are going to begin to feel that way. You know, the answer, they used to say that the answer to bad speech was more free speech, and I think
mm-hmm.
that's true. I think that the people involved in this stuff today, this cancel culture and the wokeism, I don't think they can be cured of this. I think
no.
It is part of them. But the answer is new universities, and certainly part of the answer would be new accrediting systems where new, unusual universities can grow and not have to bother about accreditation, which is really the university establishment judging them. I think the answer is more news outlets, not fewer news outlets,
right.
but that are based on the true principles of journalism. And I think maybe we can get some balance back. But it is very difficult to retrain a generation. And when you have
mm-hmm.
a generation today that is brought up the way this one is being brought up, I do fear for the country. You know, also, we have to remember that what happens to the United States will be very heavily influenced by what happens internationally. And when other countries look at us and begin to realize the United States is faltering, they will seek other allies elsewhere. And they will not turn to the United States and look. If you look, for example, at the condition in the Western Pacific with China coveting Taiwan, they've always wanted to envelop and control Taiwan,
mm-hmm.
this would actually be a very good time for them to make a military strike. America is in a weakened
sure.
condition. We're in a confused position. And what if they do and they take Taiwan? What would the president of the United States actually do? You can't imagine this president doing anything.
No, you cannot imagine President Biden going on TV tonight saying, ladies and gentlemen, an act of war happened in Taiwan, and we are going to defend Taiwan as our ally. It's hard to imagine that's coming from this man. I'm sorry, but it
that's
is.
Right.
So.
That's
and
right.
that's what worries
and I,
me.
I fully...
Let me just quickly, because time is flashing by, I do want to ask, just kind of go quickly talk about the border, because, Bill, do you remember during the campaign candidate Joe Biden saying that that his humanitarian policy on the border was going to fill the convention centers and military bases of people crossing the border. Do you remember any of that? Because I don't remember that, Bill. What I remember was that he didn't say anything other than we're going to be more humanitarian than Trump. This is, I think, a huge problem politically for President Biden, Bill, this border mess.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. And one wonders why a reporter at a presidential news conference doesn't ask, Mr. President, what mandate do you have for some of these actions? They were not, as you pointed out, discussed during the campaign. You made no promises that you would do things like this. Where is the mandate? You have a split Senate. You don't really control the Senate. You have a House that is controlled by, 10 votes on the part of the Democratic Party. His popularity is now reasonable, but it's declining. It's declining. Mm-hmm. It's running around 50%, which for a new president is low. I think it's going to drop considerably. The one thing the Democrats are very good at is giving checks to people, which makes them popular for a while. But you're absolutely correct. I mean, this is a man doing things he never said he would do, doing them by executive action. I think the next big hurdle and the next big action is going to try to be to make the District of Columbia a state, which would be unconstitutional, and they will just shove it through and say, stop us. Then we'll have two more Democratic senators in the Senate, and they will say that anybody who opposes this is racist. And you'll have Joe Biden coming out and say, come on, man. The fact that it's not a state is because they're black. That's the only reason. The people who are against this are racist. And we will have another disaster on our hands.
Yes, no, the funniest thing I heard today about all of this and President Biden is that he talks about Jim Crow. And apparently Delaware was one of the biggest Jim Crow states in the Union. I always thought of Delaware as being more of a northern state, but it's a little bit like Maryland. They were right on the border, and the influences were very heavy. But, I'll say what I said at the beginning. I'm not sure if Joe Biden is actually saying these things or somebody is telling him to say it, but if he doesn't get his act together, he's going to divide the country a lot. And I don't think that's going to work out well, because we're as divided as we are. I don't think turning D.C. into a state is going to go over well outside of the Democrat Party, Bill.
No, I don't think it'll go over well at all, especially since it will be set up basically as a racial state. And I think that there also an attempt is being made to turn Puerto Rico into a state. That is in certain respects more complicated, because the people of Puerto Rico periodically vote on what they want their status to be. And they've always wanted their status to be a territory, because if they're a state, they have to pay income taxes. Mm-hmm. So what they would have to do, the Democrats, to get the cooperation that they need from Puerto Rico is to declare Puerto Rico a state, which could be done by act of Congress, and then eliminate the income tax in that state. How do you think that will make the rest of the country feel?
Right. And no, they're also assuming that Puerto Ricans are all going to vote Democrat, and I'm beginning to think that that's not quite true. I thought at one time it was, but it may not be 100% true. It's not like the District of Columbia, which would be an automatic Democrat state. I mean, the governor of Puerto Rico recently was actually a Republican, and I think the new governor is too, or at least a more conservative person. Well, Bill, have a great week. As always, thank you for joining us. The time flies. The topics are complicated. But that just means we do it again next week, and we continue talking about all of these things. But the happiest thing for me that could happen this week would be to read Urgent Agenda and have you tell us, Bill, that President Biden and the Commissioner of Baseball has said, we made a mistake, and let's give it back to Atlanta. That would make me very happy this week, Bill.
That would make me happy, too, and I think it would increase the president's prestige. I'm not so sure that kind of wisdom exists in this White House.
Now, I have a feeling, though, the Commissioner of Baseball is looking for someone to bail him out, because I think he realizes what a dumb mistake he made. I would love to interview the owners of the different teams across the country who are going to take the financial beating for this. I just cannot believe that they are very happy. I don't know. How could you be happy with someone taking your business away, Bill?
That's right. And remember, they'd learned absolutely nothing from the fiasco of the NFL, which tried to deal with the same issue and dealt with it badly. I mean, you'd think they would have learned something and said, we are not a political organization. We're an athletic organization.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I kept thinking to myself. The commissioner could have come out and say, look, we understand the partisan feelings here. We understand people's points of view. We respect them. But we're in the business of, you know, of playing baseball. We're not a partisan organization, so please forget about this. But he didn't. He fell for it. And I think, sadly, as much as I love the game, they're gonna get hurt by this a great deal, Bill. I really do.
Very much so.
But again, thank you for your time. Have a wonderful week, and we look forward to our next one, Bill.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, Sylvia.
Thank you so much, Bill. Our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, talking about a lot of things this week, including the Major League Baseball and the All-Star Game, what a dreadful mistake that was. And, of course, remembering my friend Robert Jaggers, who passed away a couple of days ago. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.